issue of the Christian Century magazine carries a one-frame cartoon entitled Noah 2015. Noah is drowning in a cataclysmic storm of hurricane, lightning, and a deluge of rain. The dark clouds are labeled climate change. Noah is not in his ark. He has no ark, but he's flailing in the water, barely afloat. He exclaims, "Sure, I was warned, but the remedy sounded difficult." At the bottom of the image, a small line says, "He gathered two of every excuse." Three years ago, this week, Pope Francis released an encyclical entitled On Care for Our Common Home. And all 82 pages of that document are an impassioned summary of the efforts of scientists, theologians, and many other authorities to raise a warning to the world, especially for Christians and other people of faith, to recognize the need for a moral response. That was the beginning of the mission group we have here at St. Benedict's called the Earth Care Group. But as for Noah, the remedy sounds difficult. The gospel reading today invites us to ask, how can we find our way through the storms of our lives? This is a story of faith and of fear. Fear is the visceral response of Jesus' terrified disciples in a frail, storm-tossed boat. This picture resonates both with our individual lives and our corporate lives, with our congregations and our communities. We are afraid of the wind and the waves that assail our fragile vessels, those of our lives, of our churches, our cities, our nation. We fear disapproval, rejection, failure, meaninglessness, illness. We fear death, our own death and the death of those we love, and the potential demise of the communities that we cherish. The sea, the storm, and the fragile craft that carry our Lord and his followers across the Sea of Galilee, all of these offer evocative, metaphorical images of our life journeys, the perils of some passages we must make, the vulnerability of the craft that bears us on our way, and our longing for one who calms both us and the storm. This morning we ask, what kind of faith can face such storms? Jesus' whole ministry has been described as one dangerous crossing after another. It started at his baptism. The moment the waters close over his head, God's rushing spirit merges and meets with his. His path through the world becomes one of confrontation. Confrontation with entrenched interests and the inbreaking kingdom. The unclean spirits don't want their boat rocked. Neither do the political or religious authorities. But the Spirit of the Lord is upon Jesus. In his own words, he comes to bind the strong man. And Mark shows him doing that, one example after another. In this story, Jesus says, "Let's go across to the other side." For the gospel writer, this is more than just a change of venue. The other side represents Gentile pagan territory. It's the Decapolis, the center of Hellenistic influence on Jewish soil. It's as if Jesus turns to his followers and says, "I'm beat. Let's go touch base with the Roman authorities." And they set sail straight into the waiting storm. And this may tell us why the disciples, who are fishermen, experienced with storms, are so hopelessly out of their element in this storm. It's as if the boundary crossing has unleashed forces of chaos. And we ask, why do people stay in their own neighborhoods? Why do we enforce borders? Why do we build fences and equip armies? We're trying to keep the chaos monsters from breaking free and battering us. We try to be in control of the forces of chaos just below the surface of our vulnerable lives. And most of us don't feel equipped to deal with the monsters, internal or external. The mere thought of them is enough to make us take off like Jonah in the other direction. But here, Jesus gets into the boat just as he is. No weapons, no gear, nothing up his sleeve. And he sets a course for confrontation and falls asleep. When the storm breaks in all its fury, the disciples rouse him in panic. "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" It's a cry that we are familiar with, one of fear and a sense of betrayal in the face of what seems to be the silence of God. The natural disasters of hurricanes, tsunamis, earthquakes, floods, the tragedies of terrorist attack, war, and inexplicable acts of violence, the pain of various kinds of personal suffering, all leave us crying out to God, "Do you not care that we are perishing?" Jesus sits up, this tired, vulnerable man, and speaks directly to the wind and the waves. "Peace," he says, "be still." He talks to the storm face to face, just as he'll talk to the legion of demons waiting for him at Gerasa. It is Jesus' complete trust in God's presence with him that is the ground of his complete obedience to God and the source of his own authority. We see this in contrast to the fear of the disciples. He asked the disciples this telling question in the story: "Why are you afraid? Have you still no faith?" It's important to note Jesus never says there is nothing to be afraid of. The Galilean storm was fearsome indeed, as are the wind and waves that threaten us. Rather, he asks, "Why are you afraid? Have you still no faith?" The hard truth is that fearsome things are very real. The world is engulfed with realities, often not of our own making, but often are. And as we grow in faith, it's not a denial of such things as being real, but being ready to recognize these are not the final reality. These do not have dominion over us. These do not need to own us nor paralyze us, because there is something deeper. Faith is the trust that reigning over this world of fearsome things is God, who is present now. And such faith has the quality of radical freedom. In the midst of chaos and trouble, we are instructed, "Do not be afraid." And mark, that's the first and last word of the gospel. It's the word of the angels to the terrified shepherds. It's the word spoken at the tomb to the women who discover it is empty. "Do not be afraid, because God is with us." So the lesson is succinct. It is the presence of our Lord that brings faith, and the centering we must have for action that makes a difference. But it's not an easy posture for us to adopt, especially in the world today. For the most part, life is a frantic effort to keep pace, meet our obligations, reach our objectives. We're geared to a philosophy that when things go wrong, it's within our own capabilities to handle any problem that comes our way. But that foolishness besets us as human beings, because we are not the masters of our own fate. There are things and events we cannot control. As long as our lives are still and the surface of events over which we move is smooth, it seems we're sufficient to cope. Our muscles row, our eyes guide, and our heads plan. Out on the lake, a shout goes up, "We are sinking." It's a cry that wells up from human lives, from human relationships, human institutions, and our civilizations. especially when it seems we've tried so much and found nothing to work. For some, it's a contempt. There is a contempt for this cry that they feel is sounded against the empty universe. Others realize that the cry can signal a moment of change, of turning, of recovery, of new creation. In that moment, the Lord's voice sounds and resonates deep within and awakens our very soul. Peace, be still. Jesus speaks with God's authority and faith is born. Faith emerges from the chaos of our fearful hearts. The center of our existence is shifted. Our response is an inner awakening to worship, for we know we have encountered the one who calls us into being. The desire of our lives then becomes, how can I make this newfound relationship the center of my living? I'd like to close this morning with a quote from the 5th century church theologian Augustine of Hippo. One of his sermons entitled Awakening the Christ Asleep in You. He writes, when you have to listen to abuse, that means you're being buffeted by the wind. When your anger is roused, you are being tossed by the waves. So when the wind blows and the waves mount high, the boat is in danger. Your heart is in peril. Your heart is taken a battering. On hearing yourself insulted, you long to retaliate. But the joy of revenge brings with it another kind of misfortune, shipwreck. And why is this? Because Christ is asleep in you. What do I mean? I mean you have forgotten his presence. Rouse him, then, remember him, let him keep watch within you. Pay heed to him. The temptation arises, it is the wind. It disturbs you, it is the surging of the sea. This is the moment to awaken Christ and let him remind you of those words. Who can this be? Even the winds and the sea obey him.